Thanks for listening to The Kick-Ass Life with David Wood. Stay connected on Facebook / The Kick-Ass Life, on Twitter at The Kick-Ass Life, and of course, at thekickasslife.com.
Jambo, fellow adventurers, this is Mike Dooley, and you are listening to David Wood on The Kick-Ass Life Show.
Life better?
This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Hello, hello, hello. Mate, I shouldn't be saying that. I should be saying it more like this. G'day, g'day, g'day. Aussie, Aussie, Aussie. Well, you know, I am beaming. My guest today is a rock star in more ways than one. So I can't wait to introduce you to him. But I better catch you up a little bit first and see what's going on for you. How's life? Are you kicking some ass out there? I hear a lot of you are just starting to get some of this stuff. I had a great, great, great call last night. My good friend Mike that I keep talking about, the reason why he's so great is because he's married to Donna. Let's be honest. And she called me last night. She listened to my show, Laugh Your Ass Off. And she phoned me, and I've never heard Donna tell me a joke before, and she burst into this joke, and it was awesome. And she did it so well, and she's committing to making sure that she tells more jokes. And, you know, you have to listen to that show to get what that's all about. But after she did that, I was actually, I was sitting there, and I was tingly, because I started thinking, you know, imagine that. Imagine if the only thing the show did was to open up that door for people, that fun door, that door where, you know, people are laughing more, and people, no one ever says that, oh, I don't do jokes, I can't tell jokes, that people are always looking for opportunities to create more laughter, more fun. And it's really funny when you sort of collect jokes like I do. And I love hearing jokes. And Donna, you did a rocking job. And, you know, and I want to say the other thing that you told me last night on the phone, Donna, and I know you're going to hear this show because she told me she listened to 3 shows in one day, Mike Dooley, and then Laugh Your Ass Off, and then she listened to the show by David Wagner, and she said how important that show was, that really, really sort of made a real dent inside of her. Like, dent's the wrong word, but she also noticed the sound quality differences. I've got more and more sort of in tune with this equipment. It doesn't sound as crappy. You know, guess what? You know, I was a guy with 2 left thumbs with all this stuff. I used to go dizzy every time. I couldn't even program my phone. I had to ask someone to show me how to turn it on. So anyway, it's coming. But, you know, we'll obviously hopefully keep getting better. And there's sometimes I forget a knob. And if you hear a little echo in the background, all that kind of stuff, it's because I've forgotten a knob here and there. But anyway, I'm going to see if you can guess where I'm at. You could obviously give it away a little bit before the show. But I, you know, as I like to do, this is all additional work, by the way, is adding a little bit. Guess where I'm at. I love this song. And I love the Aussie people.
From a man in Brussels.
Oh, yeah.
He was 6'4".
Full of muscle. Am I singing again?
I said, do you speak my language? He just smiled and gave me a Vegemite sandwich. And he said, I come from a land of love.
I shouldn't be singing, listen to that. My guest can, he's a musician. He'll listen to this and he's going to cringe. Anyway, so here I am in Australia. And I got to tell you, I love being here. I told you many times, just something about the people and the way they see life. I just really happy to be here. And I'm happy to be broadcasting from the land down under. And those of you, young people that listen to the show, you know, if you haven't started your bucket list yet of where you want to go and travel in the world, get out of Dodge. And one of the things I really feel, and I don't have strong opinions, maybe I do, but the you young people, you know, you're leaving school and then deciding what you want. I'm not saying it's a wrong thing to do, but I'm saying, what about taking a year off? I know in some cultures you'll see that, the gap year. Australia's like that. Go travel for a year. Find out who the hell you are. Then make a decision about what you want to do for the rest of your life. But it just is everything that I found out in myself. I came from those 10 and a half years of backpacking around the world. You know, and I was terrified in the beginning. And that's the whole thing, you know, when you're terrified, it doesn't mean you have to stop and not do this stuff, right? I mean, when you're terrified, it's when you feel that fear is stepping into it. And I remember it was so long. I was just like big knot in my stomach of fear. And I remember I'd been to Tunisia, and then I traveled through Egypt and then through the Sinai and in Israel, probably about 9 months into living in Israel, where my sort of knot started to loosen. And I started to realize that people are really good and people are amazing. And that when I had the courage to show up in any moment, in any situation, things and people and experiences and wonder and the miracle that really is available to all of us shows up. And so I realized my inner world definitely created my outer world. And that's a lot about what our guest is going to share with you today, because he's a master at this. Before that, though, I just wanted to share a couple of these reviews on iTunes. And this is written pretty small, and I'm getting pretty old, so hopefully I can see. This one's called Mind Food. These are all from Australia. So now I'm here, I can see the old Aussie. I can't tell. I mean, this is the weird thing about iTunes, I suppose. I shouldn't be knocking it because they are our provider. But, you know, I wish they had all of the reviews in one spot from all the different countries. We're in 140 countries, but I can only see the Canadian reviews. Or if I'm in America, I can see the American reviews, which is crazy. But these are from Australia, and this one's called Mind Food, and it's from Annie. I know Annie. Hi, Annie. I'll see you, I think, later on today. It's kooky, thought-provoking, authentic, entertaining, uplifting, enthralling, liberating, and, of course, kick-ass good mind food. Thank you, David. Annie P. Here's another one. It says, listen and you'll see, with lots of E's. And this is from Moi Aussie, De Plus. This is on the 17th of September. She said, thank you. Inspiring, thought-provoking, positive, funny, informative, and lots of other good things have opened up a whole new world to me. And I am happily look forward to the latest podcast download. I wish there was one every single day, so I'm listening from the first one all over again. Thank you, David Wood. Seriously, I think you have rescued me from a 3-to-5 life. Now, that's... Remember, that's in reference to what I said. You say, I think most people get trapped in between a 3 and 5 in their whole life. They don't ever go to a 0, and they don't ever go to a 10. Think of an orchestra. If we were an orchestra, we want to play all of the instruments. We want to be the trombone. We want to be the saxophone. We want to be the little tiny triangle, ding. We want to be, you know, the great big timpani drum, boom, 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 and the violins, and we can be it all. And that's why we have to learn to live in range. And leading a kick-ass life is about that. And no one more than my guest right now, this guy is over the top. I mean, you talk about leading a kick-ass life. He does more in a day than most of us do in a year. And that's including me. And I thought I was busy. But he's not busy. You'll hear in the show, he's really balanced out his life. But he's the author of 50 books. Many, many, many of them are bestsellers, right? He's recorded many of Nightingale Conan audio programs, including the Awakening Course, The Missing Secret, The Secret of Attracting Money, The Abundance Paradigm, and his latest, which is called The Ultimate Law of Attraction Library. He's been in several movies, including The Secret, the blockbuster, international blockbuster, The Secret. He's been on The Larry King Show. He's been on The Big Idea, CNN, CNBC, CBS, ABC, Fox News, Fox and Friends. He's been featured in The New York Times, Newsweek, and recently in The Rolling Stone magazine. He also has the Miracles Coaching Program that helps people achieve their dreams by understanding their deeper aspects of the law of attraction and the law of the right type of action. He was once homeless, as you're going to hear, and poverty, deep in poverty. And it's my great pleasure to have him on the show. Why don't you listen in as I have a chat with my emerging friend, as we've spent we haven't spent a lot of time together yet, but my commitment is to spend a lot more time with him. And we do swing in the same circle, so I do have that blessing to actually spend more time with him. And Just listen in as I have a big chat with Dr. Joel Vitale. So I always start the show the same way. I always say how excited I am. And today is no different. I mean, the gentleman I have on the show today is somebody who I've really admired. And just watching him and what he achieves, it's staggering. It's almost I almost think that there's triplets because this I like to think of him really as a master of achievement and a master of managing time. And so, Joe, I just want to welcome you to the call.
Thank you. Triplets, huh? I've never had anybody accuse me of having doubles and triples here, so that's a great way to begin this. What a science fiction idea.
When I look at all the things you've achieved, and there are so many people who listen to the show. Now, I mean, we're in 140 countries, and this thing's downloaded in the hundreds of thousands. And so there are people all over the world really looking for answers, things that they can help them and steer them from where they're at to where they want to go in their lives. And I wonder, just sort of going back into your story, having achieved so much, and we'll talk about some of those achievements as we go, but how did you start out? Can you give us kind of like a little look back into your beginnings?
Well, I started out unknown, broke, poor, depressed, unhealthy, unhappy. I mean, I started out pretty much like every other scrambling, starving person, you know. I had a big dream when I was a teenager. I decided I wanted to be an author, and then I did that mad scramble for the next 30-some years of trying to get published, trying to get a name for myself. And in that process, I did everything from I was homeless for a while in Dallas back in the late 1970s. I was in poverty for a long time when I lived in Houston around the 1980s. So my overnight success was overnight only if you say it was 30-some years. So it's not been any sort of easy street. And back then when I was, I had a big dream and I wanted to be a published author and I wanted to write things that made a difference in people's lives, I couldn't find the easy button to make that happen. And so there was a whole lot of struggle and strife, but I just kept trying. I just kept being persistent. And so, today I live the lifestyle of the rich and famous, and I get to do this shows like this kick-ass one right now. So life is tremendously different.
Well, obviously, you've gone on to write numerous best-selling books, so obviously you figured that out. But I want to go back to that time. You're homeless in the 70s. You're in poverty in the 80s. How did you climb out of that? What was that? You said you kept working, but were you changing how you were thinking? Were you getting smarter in the approach? I mean, what was going on for you? How did you dig out of that hole?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. And the truth of the matter is, and I find this true for everybody in every sort of situation, is that you have to take care of the inside of yourself before you see any changes on the outside of yourself. And I was reading all the self-help books, and in fact, when I was homeless in Dallas, where I hid from the elements and from the world was in the public library. And thank God for the public library. I've always been a bookaholic, always been a reader. I just love books. So I can be surrounded by them, and I would park myself in the self-help, the popular psychology, the general psychology, the metaphysics, the philosophy section. And I would read these books that would basically say my life was my responsibility. The Think and Grow Rich books, the Magic of Believing books, the Magic of Thinking Big books, all of those classics. And I would take them in and actually argue with them, because when you're homeless, the last thing you want to hear is that it's your fault. So, I would have punched Napoleon Hill if I could have, if he had walked up to me and said that. But it was that inside work where I really took it on and said, look, I think I'm doing the right things. I wasn't into drugs. I wasn't into alcohol. I wasn't doing self-destructive behavior. I was following a dream. I wanted to be an author. So it seemed to me I was doing the right things. How come they weren't working out? And as I pursued it, one of the great big ahas that I think you and your audience will find fascinating is that I realized I was unconsciously modeling my life on the lives of authors who had been self-destructive. For example, Ernest Hemingway and Jack London were two of my big influences. So I read their works and I would model their writing style. But here was the big mistake. I also modeled their lifestyle. They both ended as adventurous suicides. And when it dawned on me that maybe I created homelessness, maybe I was creating poverty, maybe I was creating this drama so I would have an interesting biography, then I realized, wait a minute, I'm actually doing this. I'm the puppet, and I'm pulling my own strings. But I didn't know it. And we do this all the time. I was doing it unconsciously. And when I woke up to that and said, wait a minute, I can model their writing styles but forget their lifestyles. Surely there's authors out there that are happy, they're healthy, they're balanced, they're productive, they're wealthy, they're prolific. When I looked for them and started to model them, son of a gun, my life started to change. So I realized it was all coming from me to begin with. I just didn't know it, and I didn't like hearing it when it first came up. But that was the reality, and it is for all of us.
So sort of taking back to the audience that's listening in, and we say that, you know, 90%, maybe 95%, maybe 99%, maybe 100% of the audience, you know, is being influenced by people around them that are having those effects, that are really impacting them in a way unconsciously that's creating behaviors. Would you agree that's true? It's not just people that you read. I mean, it's people around you as well, right?
Well, the people that I read were the people around me. In many ways, they were alive. When I would open a book by P.T. Barnum or Dale Carnegie or something by Herman Melville, those authors were living and breathing and alive in my mind, which is where all of our experience is anyway. So those were the people that were around me. But yes, it's an absolute, fundamental, non-arguable truth that everybody around you is influencing you unconsciously. That's why there's a rule of thumb that says if you want to look at why you're earning the amount of money you are, look at the people, the five closest people to you, and look at the average of their income. You are probably making about what they're making. You are being influenced by those people around you. Your environment is causing you to act in a particular way. That's coming from your thoughts, and those thoughts are coming from the people you're observing. You're coming to conclusions. You're seeing their behavior. You're modeling it, and you're doing it unconsciously. So those authors, for me, was my immediate environment, but that's true for everybody. It's not just what you read. It's the people you're talking to. It's the whole effect of who are you hanging around. Those people are causing you to do what you're doing and get the results you're getting.
So when we look at this and we say that you've had this big aha moment, you've started to realize you're reading this book or these books, these authors that have inspired you, and now you've realized that you want to follow their style, but not the way they live. When you got that aha, what changes were you making then? What were you consciously doing as opposed to unconsciously doing?
Well, the very first one was to look at my thoughts. And you got to remember, this is back before the internet, and I am largely doing this by myself because I'm not in a relationship. I don't have a car. I don't have a job. I don't have family. I am by myself in Dallas. I'm in the public library. My friends, in a very literal way, are the authors that I'm reading. So when I'm reading their books and they're really telling me to look at my thoughts, my first thought is, what's wrong with my thoughts? My thoughts are working just fine. I can think. I know I'm thinking, so shut up. But then when I take it in deeper, and I mean, this is the sense most people argue with. It's the idea of taking it in where you're 100% responsible for everything going on in your life. That is such a hurdle because it's so easy to blame, and that's where I was. If I was in a time machine and I can go back as the Joe of today and go see the Joe of yesterday and say, hey, Joe, change your thoughts and change your behavior and everything's going to work out, I would probably be in a fist fight. Because that Joe, as with most people who don't accept responsibility, want to sit there and blame. So the first thing I had to do was look at my thoughts and go, are my thoughts actually serving me? And I'm pausing because that's so dramatic. That's something I want everybody to get. And I look at myself even today and go, you know, when I was in college in Kent State University in Ohio, I remember friends who knew me who would say I was naturally pessimistic. Now, listen to this. They would say I was naturally pessimistic. Today, people look at me and they go, oh, Joe, you're so fun-loving and optimistic. You're just naturally optimistic. Well, wait a minute. Which is true? Am I naturally pessimistic or am I naturally optimistic? Now I'm optimistic because I've chosen that. When I was being pessimistic, I was doing that on autopilot, and I didn't even know I was unconsciously choosing it. So to answer your question, I had to become aware of my thoughts. Were my thoughts serving me? Were they positive? Were they uplifting? Were they hopeful? Were they taking me in the direction of where I want to go? Or were they really self-sabotage? Were they really saying, Joe, you can go ahead and try all you like, but you're never going to make it? Some of my thoughts were like that. That thought didn't serve me. So the big one for me is looking at my thoughts. And even today, I'll catch myself starting to drift a little negative, and I'll go, wait a minute, this is a choice. You've been there before. I'm not going down the Jack London, Ernest Hemingway chute. I'm staying here. I'm going for my dreams. I'm staying positive. My God, I'm Mr. Fire. I'm going to stay on fire. And just keep on going. So thoughts, to answer your question.
Okay, so I'm thinking of, I'll use an example. A lady sitting at home right now, and I'll use a lady because she's a stay-home mom. She's got a couple of kids. She's got three jobs. And she's old. I mean, she's struggling each month. She's just sort of like, sort of in that sort of hole. And then she's listening to this show, and she says, okay, I'm going to work on my thoughts. And that's what's going to change all of this. So she starts this process. Can you lead her specifically through the steps you took? So as you started to notice your thoughts and started to manage your thoughts, what else were you doing around that conversation to help you get to where you've got today?
I love it. That's a brilliant question. What I tell people to do, and this is what I would tell her to do, is look around at your situation and explain to yourself or to somebody else. You can do this in a dialogue with somebody else. How'd you get here? Tell me the story. Give me the meaning that you've given to your situation. And I'll just make up something since we have this hypothetical situation and this woman working three jobs and she wants to look at her thoughts and so forth. I'd say, okay, you're working three jobs. It looks like you're really struggling here. What does this mean? And she may end up saying something to the effect of, I always knew it would be like this. Mm. Or I was brought up to be independent. My mother told me that I'm going to end up being alone and I'm going to have to work all these different jobs. She might end up saying something like, all of this is happening because of men. A guy left me, a guy betrayed me, and the man owns the businesses, and here I am having to work for three different men because that's how I have to do it. What I'm trying to illustrate here is there's meaning that we give the events that are going around us. That meaning is the belief that caused the events. And again, I'm pausing because this is a treasure of a very deep insight that almost nobody ever hears about, let alone looks at, let alone talks about, let alone uses to transform their lives.
Would you repeat it one more time just so they can hear again?
Yeah. The meaning you give the events around you is the very belief that is causing those events. And so let me illustrate this. A lot of people come to me because they want to have more money in their lives. And I've been a marketer, and I've been a copywriter, and I'm a law of attraction guy, and I was in The Secret, and I've written books on it like Attract Money Now. So I've got a bit of a status as an expert in this subject. So people come to me, and they say, I want to attract more money. I want to earn more money. I want to receive more money. Well, Godspeed to them. I want them to have more money, too. They're doing all the right things. They're actually taking out ads. They're doing the Facebook thing. They're doing whatever they've been told to do, social media, direct mail. Maybe they're running an infomercial. Maybe they're working three jobs like the woman you were just talking about. They're doing all this, but the money's not coming. Why not? Almost all of us have an unconscious limiting belief about money. When I say the statement, money is the root of all, I don't have to finish it.
No.
Everybody else rushes in and says, well, money is the root of all evil. So imagine this. If unconsciously you think money is the root of all evil, and yet you're out there and you're working and you're writing and you're striving and you're networking and you're doing everything you know to do, well, all of those things are going to be self-sabotaged by you because unconsciously you really don't even want money. You think it's evil. This is the kind of in-depth thought exploration that I'm talking about, that I had to do, this woman with the three jobs has to do, anybody listening has to do. Most of us have issues with money. So we can say till the cows come home, we want to have more money, and we're doing everything possible to have it. Well, unconsciously, if you think it's bad or evil or rich people are greedy or manipulative or you'll turn bad or taxes will come after you or any number of a bunch of limiting beliefs, those beliefs will unconsciously be active in your mind, and you will push money away. This is why so many people who win the lottery, I mean, my God, they win the lottery, millions of dollars, and then they're broke and sometimes even more in debt a year, 2 years later. They are not comfortable with money. So this is, without even being on the money subject, we can go into relationships, we can go into health, we can find these beliefs that are active. And what I tell people to do is what I'm telling that woman who gave me as an example to do. Ask yourself, what does it mean that I have to work three jobs? Whatever your answer is pretty close to the belief that's actually causing you to work those three jobs. The woman might have said it's all because of men. Well, that's a belief. Where'd the belief come from? Well, probably from her mother or somebody young when she was growing up, and she heard it and took it on, again, unconsciously. You know, she wasn't thinking consciously, oh, all men are bad, I'm going to work, this is going to be my prime operating system for the rest of my life. You don't consciously choose that. Unconsciously you do. This is why the unconscious belief exploration is the million-dollar technique to get out of all the things that we call blocks and problems in our lives.
So I just want to mention, I know you offer a free book, and this is one of the subjects that you're a master in, is attractmoneynow.com is a website. They can go there and then get this free book, attractmoneynow.com. I just want to mention that because I think people, you know, you're right. I mean, so many people, they look at this one area of their life and it's the definition of their success. So even as we talk of this woman with three jobs and struggle, there's a lot of people who look affluent on the outside and they have the nice car and they have the big house and they have all these things, but the same stuff's going on. It's just in a different, arena, right?
Absolutely. And those same people might have a different kind of problem. They might have a relationship problem. They might have a health problem. They might just have an issue with happiness, and they're not content. The vast majority of us simply aren't happy. I mean, it's the whole Henry David Thoreau quote about the, you know, men lead these lives of quiet desperation. Well, it's not just men. It's men and women. And a large part of it is unconsciously, and again, this is another belief that needs to be looked at, most of us unconsciously don't love ourselves. And so we look around and we say, well, of course I don't have a perfect relationship. I don't deserve one. Who would love me? And we don't sit there consciously. Sometimes we do, but we don't usually sit there consciously dwelling on the fact that we feel unlovable. But unconsciously, we were brought up by well-meaning people who told us things like you weren't good enough. You had to struggle. You had to work harder. You weren't like the other people. In one way or another, we concluded, we may not have actually been specifically told, but we concluded that we weren't like other people, that we were actually different. We were probably not good enough. We were probably not lovable. So as adults, we're almost in this arrested development stage mentally, and we try to attract perfect love or perfect health or perfect wealth or whatever it happens to be, and we find ourselves struggling with it. Why? Partly because unconsciously we don't think we deserve it. So of course we're not in the ideal relationship. We don't feel lovable. Of course we don't have all of the wonderful things we want in our lives. We don't think we deserve it. So what I'm saying here, and this is what I had to go through, only it was harder for me because I did it by myself, is it's almost like mind surgery. You have to look at the beliefs inside of yourself, choose the ones that are serving you, replace the ones that aren't serving you, so you can have what you so lovingly call the kick-ass life. That's where I'm at now. But I had to go and do this belief surgery on myself to get here. Now, today we got tools like your show and all these wonderful books and the movies that are out there and the internet with all these wonderful things we can choose. There's ways to make this happen. But anybody listening right now, I challenge them and invite them to sit down and meditate on how do you think you got to where you're at? What do you think might be the meaning for your current reality? It's just current reality. It can change, and it will change as you change your beliefs. Look at what you're giving this reality meaning to, and that meaning reflects what the beliefs are. The beliefs can then be questioned. When you do have a belief like, well, my mother said that men will always rip me off, so I'm going to have to be independent, work all these different jobs. Or maybe you have the belief that money is bad, and now you have to go and look, well, is money really bad? as I talk about in my book, Attract Money Now, money's frickin' neutral. There's nothing good or bad about it. It is as neutral as can be. You are from Australia, I believe, and when I was in Australia, they gave me money that didn't look anything like the money in America, but yet somehow it was valued over there. when I was in Russia, they gave me their money, and I looked at it like, am I playing Monopoly here? What, this money isn't real, but son of a gun, it was. When I'm in Poland, they give me their money. I'm in Bermuda, they give me their money. I'm in Peru, they give me their money. The point is that the money is an agreed-upon means of exchange. It's just frickin' energy in the form of paper and coin. It's not bad. It's not good. It's probably a tool, but it's neutral. And so when people look and think, oh, money's bad or money's evil, it's like, really? Is it? Let's question that. Because as soon as you can see it's a frickin' tool, now you can go ahead and use it. And one of my examples is from Donald Trump, because everybody thinks, well, he's the biggest egotist in the world, and I've had encounters with Donald Trump, and I know, you know what he loves? He loves deal-making. That's his passion. That's his calling. That's his kick-ass life. He's not in love with money. He uses money as a scorecard. If he is doing well with his deals, they give him something we all call money. Now he knows that he's doing well with his passion, his calling, his life work. That's where I think we need to go. It's the same thing with Walt Disney's famous quote when he said that he wants to keep making money from his movies so he can keep making movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's neutral. It's peaceful. It's loving. Use money to extend your reality. So anyway, what I'm saying here is we all are invited and challenged a bit to look at our beliefs. Change those beliefs, and my God, the same world you're sitting in right now is suddenly blossoming with opportunities and treasures and relationships and wealth and ideas and, oh my God, what a magical universe.
And yeah, exactly. So I love what we started off the show with you talking about, you know, obviously we work on the inside and everything we've spoken about so far is this journey, right? But I want to take you to this moment again. If we use the lady or you, if we go back to the 80s, you're in this aha moment, you're realizing your thought process is you started a question. You're questioning every thought that doesn't serve you. And I'm just wondering again, because I can see someone sitting at home right now, they start this questioning process and yet they still want success. They still want something to change. What is the next step beyond that? Where do we go once we really start having that conversation? Because you know what it's like. You know, people try things. They buy a gym membership, and 16 days later, they're back in the pub. You know, the gym membership goes unused. Why do we start these processes and then fade away from them?
Well, most of the time, because it's very difficult to change a habit by yourself. And that was another secret I discovered along the way, is that I got results at phenomenal speed when I would enlist support. Now, when I say support, I don't mean that I got somebody else to do the work. I mean I got somebody else to hold me accountable for me doing the work. This goes back to one of the little tangent things we talked about earlier when we talked about our environment. We talked about the people around us. For example, if I join a gym by myself, it's got to take tremendous willpower and a great big fiery visual goal to get there, to go there by myself 3 times a week, 5 times a week, whatever I decided to do. It's got to be phenomenally easy not to do it because I'm drawing from my own well of willpower. I can do it. People obviously have done it, but it's far harder to do it by yourself because now you're trying to buck your own habitual system. If you've not been working out, you suddenly join a gym, you're causing this giant ship called your life to change in a new direction, and you're steering it by yourself. You can do it. I want to make sure that's clear. You can do it. But every time I've been in fitness, and I've been in 5 fitness contests, I got an honorable mention with the Bill Phillips Award 5 years ago, I've worked out with different celebrities. I know people like Lou Ferrigno. I can name all kinds of things in the fitness world. When I've gotten the best results is when I enlisted support, either with a personal trainer or just somebody I could email and say, here's what I did today, here's what I'm going to do tomorrow. That sense of support and accountability has caused me to get dramatic results in areas that what people marvel at now, because they go, you're a musician, you've got four CDs out, you're an author, you've got 50 books, you've got all these DVDs, you've got a coaching program, you travel, you speak, and you were in fitness, and you've been in movies, and you blah, blah, blah. It just keeps on going.
Did I mention triplets?
Yes, and I've got my secret weapon are triplets. That's right.
There's three of them. I found the secret to his success.
Yeah, nobody's ever said that before. So I sit in the hot tub all day, and my triplets are out there marching around the universe. But for me, you got to do the belief work, because that gets you clear to allow other things to happen. And one of the other things to happen is to get support. Surround yourself by people who want the mutual goal. Get the trainer or the coach or the support system to get that done. That, to me, gets you over that hurdle of having to do it by yourself. Since I mentioned music, yeah, 2 years ago I was not a musician. In the last 18 months, I've come out with four music CDs. I've been in Rolling Stone magazine. I've been in Texas Music magazine. I've got movies that are looking at my music to use as soundtracks. I've got a couple of music videos. I'm looking at making other music videos. I've got three Grammy winners involved in my last CD. I can go on and on. How in the world does this happen? How do you go from not being a musician, having four CDs out, and all this amazing success? Here's how it happens. I decided I wanted to be a musician. We decide everything that we want to do. I decided I want to be a musician. All kind of negativity came up. Who am I to be a musician? I got no experience, no education, no real talent. I never even sang in the shower. I didn't have any of this kind of stuff. I have to look at all the beliefs that are coming up so I can get to the point of clarity to say, yes, this is possible for me. Then what do? I surround myself with a team. I get a vocal coach, I get a guitar coach, I get a producer, and these advisors are there to help me with my questions and to keep me on track. And the days when I think, oh, you know what, I don't think I'm going to pull this off, I don't think I can do this, I got my team to remind me of my goal, and I got my own technology of looking at my questions to remove any of the negativity so I can be back into clarity. So I can go on and on, but having support for your goals makes it easier for you to get out of the habit of not doing what you didn't do in the first place.
Well, and I want to talk about the action you took in a moment, but I want to go back and say that what I notice. I mean, I've taught all over the world, and people struggle, especially when they start opening this door to possibility. When they sort of get over the struggle survival mode, or when they start realizing that, you know, everything's available to be had. But so many people struggle initially discovering the things that they're passionate about, or they're unlocking those dreams. So you know, if that woman again, if we go back to her and anyone in any circumstance, and you say, you know, beginning that dream again about unlocking, you know, what is it you want? How do you know? What kind of advice could you give to someone who really doesn't believe in anything yet? And you know, and now you're asking them to dream big dreams, or you haven't said that, but people say that to them. Where do they start with that whole process of saying, I can have something other than what I've got right now?
Well, that's another great question. I love it. And I do tell people to dream big dreams. My tagline at the end of almost every email I send out says, dare something worthy. I want people to go for what they think might even be impossible for them, because it's going to stretch them and excite them and impassion them in ways that are going to be so dramatically more exciting than the ho-hum existence of just going to work at a job you may or may not like. So I would, first of all, tell these people that wherever you're at right now is your momentary current reality. Appreciate it, because you created it and it's serving you on a lot of different levels, probably including survival. Beyond that, I'd start to entertain, what would I like to do with my life if I had the ability to do anything? I gave a talk 20-some years ago, and I called it How to Think Like God. And I invited people to pretend that they were God. Because if you were thinking like your perception of God, and I'm not getting into religion here, I'm using it as a mind-expanding technique, and if you could imagine you had the ability to think like a God, you would not be coming up with excuses, you would not be coming up with limitations, you'd not be coming up with any sort of boundary to what you would go for. You'd go for it. You'd admit it to yourself, because you got these almost superhuman powers to attain it. So I invite people to think like God. What would you do? What would you go for? What would your life be like if you had God-like powers? And I could also drop it down and go back to the lottery. And I've often told people, look, the Super Lotto in America a while back was like $300 and some million. If you won $300 and some million tonight, and you'll even still add $200 million after taxes, and that's cash and it's in your pocket, what would you do? And then I even push a little bit more and say, yeah, I know you're going to go buy 12 cars, and you're going to buy 3 houses, and you're going to go around the world 17 times, and you're going to buy this and that and the other. After you've done all of that, and after you're done playing and spending, and you sit down and you go, okay, that was fun, what are you going to do now? This starts to go in the direction of being honest with yourself about what you really want to do with your life. And then another thing I do with people, I'll say, let's go back to when you were a child. And you're playing, and you're dreaming, and you're imagining. What did you think you wanted to do when you grew up? Or what were you doing just because it was fun for you to do? For me, I was reading books. Nobody told me to read these books. In fact, in school, when they told me to read a book, I wouldn't do it just to be a rebellious guy. But at home, I'd read, or at the library, I'd read everything in sight. I wanted to read. That led to me wanting to be a writer. It was a very natural extension for me. That's not for everybody, but it was for me. So I'm telling people, start to sniff out in the most fun way that passion of yours. I personally believe each one of us has a passion to pursue. We may have dodged it. We may have hidden it. We may have pushed it aside because we were into survival and we had issues to take care of. I understand that. I've been there. I know that feeling, and I also know it can be transcended. Because when we each go for our passion, that's when the world starts to work. You know, years ago I gave a talk, and at the beginning of it I handed out a jigsaw puzzle. And I told everybody to take one piece of the jigsaw puzzle, and I kept the cover of the box so they didn't know what they were getting. And this entire audience now has a piece of the jigsaw puzzle. And I said, look, look at your piece of the jigsaw puzzle. It makes no sense to you by itself. But when you walk up here and contribute your piece of the puzzle to this box, and that person does, and that person does, and that person, and everybody in the audience does, we create this wonderful work of art. That's why I think it's so important that we discover our passion and begin to pursue it, no matter what's going on in the current reality. Because as we start to pursue it, doors and windows will open and life will begin to change. There'll be more of an exuberance, more of a joy, and you're going in the direction of fulfilling your passion. So,
That's,
I can keep going.
No. This is awesome. This is awesome. I want to go again now. Something that happened with when I was talking to Suzanne, your personal assistant, and she was awesome. She said something to me. She said Joe would prefer to call you, and I said, well, actually, you know, I always normally call out, and she said, well, no, the reason he does it is because, you know, time is so important. And he doesn't like wasting even a minute of that time. And he wants to make sure that, you know, if we're going to do something at a certain time, we're going to do it on time. And that really gave me a real understanding a little bit into how, I mean, because you've done so many things. And like I say, I'm going to use the triplet metaphor again. Really, for the average person, you know, that woman who's struggling through, or people who sound busy. In other words, that they go to work and they you know, they have their kids and they do all this other thing. That's no different from people who are successful. So talk to me a little bit about how you've managed your time. You've got your passion, you know, you've changed your thoughts, you know, you've surrounded yourself with a support group, but you've now gone into some form of action, unlike like with this music CD. I mean, you set these, you didn't just tell people you were going to learn to play the guitar. You told them you were going to release a hit CD. I mean, you said that before you'd learn to play the guitar. I mean, I remember when you were telling me this in when we were in Hawaii together. It was like, what? Okay, so now lead us through this part, which is obviously, you know, where the, you know, all the bullshit stops here, because, right, you know, now you're going to take it into action. You're actually going to make this thing come true. Well, how important is this piece?
Action is the deciding factor in results or not. And that's the one thing I find that most people are reluctant to do. And again, it goes back to beliefs, because they say, not me, not now, I don't have the money, I don't have the experience, I don't have, and there's a whole long list of excuses. I used to have those, but I found that I didn't get anything done, and if I didn't get anything done, there were no results to measure or nothing to cash in and no rewards or anything else. So I have become Mr. Action. I'm a massive take action guy. My nickname, Mr. Fire, comes a lot from the fact that I partly inspire people, so I'm always lighting a fire under them, but I'm always lighting a fire under myself. I am very passion-driven. I have learned to follow my inspiration because it has led me to the most wondrous life that I've ever been able to imagine. And it just continues to glow. It just continues to keep enriching and expanding. But it comes from taking action. Now, when people first hear, oh, Joe's written 50 books, he must be a bookaholic. He must be sitting there as a type A heart attack guy who's just doing nothing but writing all day long, every day. That is not the case. It is not the case at all. What I'm doing is working on one project at a time to the best of my ability with great focus and great clarity, and when it is done, I move on to the next project. When you keep doing that, after about 20 years, you look back and you go, oh, I wrote 50 books, but I didn't set out to write 50 books. If I had sat down and said, I'm going to write 50 books by the time I'm 60, I would not have been able to do it. I would have just collapsed underneath the weight of that huge goal. But when you sit down 20-some years ago and go, okay, I got this idea for a book. It's really exciting to me. Let me start writing it. I write it. I pursue it. I get it done. I get it published. I market it, and I move on. There's another idea. I move on to another book. I start writing that one, pursuing that one. The whole point is I live this wonderful flow of a life that I believe is truly a kick-ass life. And this is the kind of life anybody can have. You can have whatever it is that you want. And for me, it is a non-stressful life because what I'm doing is following my inspiration, taking action, and managing my time to the effect that it's not interrupting with a lot of that inspiration. For example, you and I set up this phone call. I'm only doing this call today. I do have an appointment later, but that's music related. That ties into another one of the goals. I'm not doing back-to-back calls because then I can't get my blogs done, then I can't send out an email, then I can't work on the book. I have two new books that will be coming out next year, and so we're finishing those, and I'm getting the covers done for them and so forth. I need to make time for those. But I'm allowing myself this easy flow that has a couple appointments in them. And again, these appointments that I take, I think this is crucial to say too, are fun. I'm not doing the things that aren't going to be fun because that's going to bring my energy down. That's going to dilute my enthusiasm. Talking to you, talking about a kick-ass life, hell, this is giving me more energy for the rest of the day. This is exciting. This is rejuvenating. This is, you know, everything that you want for a kick-ass life. But I got to say that action is where a lot of people fall down. They're afraid, and this goes back to looking at beliefs again. What are they afraid of? They're afraid of either failure or they're afraid of success. And most people might agree they're afraid of failure because they don't want to look foolish. I talked to a billionaire years ago, and he said he learned something profound from failure. And I said, what was that? He said, nothing bad happens to you. He says, the world forgets, the world moves on. The person who remembers is you. And if you just learn from it and adjust whatever you got back, and literally it's feedback, whatever happens is never a failure. It's just simply information. You might not have achieved what you were going for, but you got some information to help you adjust where you're going next. So he said, nothing bad happens to you. He says, the world forgets, the world forgives, the world just moves on. You learn from it, you go and do the next thing. We both know tremendous amounts of successful people, either personally or we've read about, who would have what others would have called failures. Well, we don't look at them as failures now because they kept going, they kept pursuing. So the fear of failure isn't really that relevant. It's not something to actually stop you. The fear of success a lot of people have, and they stop taking action because of it, because they look at the fear of success as meaning, okay, when I do have the money and the rewards and the big house and the cars and everything, what's my family going to think? What are my friends going to think? How will the world treat me? How will I know who my real friends are? How do I know that they're not just after me for money or for partnerships or for something else? Those are all fears. And that fear of success will sometimes stop people from taking action. I have found that having success enriches your life and everybody else's. I tell people one of the greatest reasons to have money or wealth or success is you get to make a difference not only in your life, but in the lives of your family, your friends. And if you care about pockets of the world that are having troubles, you get to be a steward for your money, a steward for your success, and you can direct it in those different places. So success is actually empowering to the planet, not just to you. So anyway, I'm trying to take away any people's concerns of taking action, because action is where it is at. You have to take action. Getting results is a co-creation in the world. It's the world doing part of it and you doing part of it. But you've got to do your part in order to benefit from any results that come about.
And it goes back to the puzzle example you gave. I think you said at the time, as we each go for our passion, that's when the world works. And so it's our, and again, going back to the responsibility piece, it's our responsibility to live our passion in my world,
absolutely,
right? So let me ask you a question. We've only got a couple of minutes left here, but if I ask you, and I know you've alluded to it enough through the show, but if I asked you the question, a kick-ass life, I mean, the show's called The Kick-Ass Life, but what does that mean to have a kick-ass life to you?
Oh, having a kick-ass life is being able to do what I want to do when I want to do it. It's being able to pick and choose where I want to go, who I want to be with, the kind of jobs I take on, the results that I get. It's living this life of exuberance, of happiness, of radiance for myself and all the people around me. It's just freaking love at a high level of activity.
I'm going to quote you. It's just freaking love. I love it.
There you go. I think that's it.
I am looking forward to bumping into you again. I know we're together again in January, and I want to make sure that we get sit down, have a meal together, and drink a cold cup of tea or a cold glass of wine, whatever you drink.
Great.
I don't know. But here's before we really wrap it up, your future. Give us a little look into the crystal ball right now. Obviously, you're a man who has this great vision and great action. So you know, as you look forward, do you make is it a 5-year? Is it 10-year? Do you have 100-year goals? I mean, what do you when you sit down and plan out your next thing? Is it just in the moment, in the whim? Do you just say, I want to do it and I go for it? Or do you lay a big long path out? What are you doing?
That's a great question. I don't lay any big long paths out anymore. I know people in Japan do it for 300 years ahead, and I'm thinking, how in the world can they predict what's going to happen next year, let alone 300 years ahead? So that just seems insane to me, but hey, Godspeed to them if it works for them. For me, I'm very much into inspired action. I used to make long-term goals, meaning maybe a year or so out. But these days, I'll look and go, okay, what's up next for me to do that's fun, that it's exciting, that's passionate, that's coming out of my calling, it's coming out of my heart? And it was, for example, the music CDs. And then I'll go, okay, when can I get those done? Well, to move heaven and earth, which we actually did, I got my first one done in 3 months. But I didn't set that as a goal. I set that as kind of like a signpost. I want to create a music CD. I want to do it in 3 months. If I don't do it in 3 months, well, maybe it'll take 4 or 5. That's okay. I don't have it set up where it's kind of like a drop dead, literally. Something bad's going to happen if it doesn't work. It's just a signpost. It's a guidepost. For the future, I have 2 books coming out next year. I'm open to another one, but I don't have anything else knocking at my inner door saying it wants to come out. I do have a movement to end homelessness called Operation Yes. I've been working on it for 4 years. I have a book on that I'm hoping to release by the end of this year, if not the beginning of next year. And I would really like to see homelessness ended. And this is me looking into my crystal ball. I think I'm up against a whole lot of belief systems, some of which I have in my own personal being, and some I see out there as a kind of a paradigm in the country or in the universe that says, no, homelessness can't be stopped. And I want to introduce the idea that, yes, it can be stopped. We have to think about it differently, and we have to take some different actions, and we have to train people out there, and we also have to inspire them. I would love to see that happening in the next 1, 2, 3 years. And as I say that, I'm open to something even better showing up. I have learned that as long as I stay in the moment, I remain inspired, I keep taking action, I will be surprised by things that will show up in my life that were never there on the radar as a goal. But they appear as an opportunity, and I go, oh, I guess that's the next thing. Let me jump there and keep on swimming. So I think being in the moment, following inspiration, and taking massive action is really my calling card for moving forward.
All right. And then, I've just got 2 more minutes here, and I just want you to share. That woman sitting on the couch right now, and she's taking a moment. The kids are in bed. And she's got that knot in her stomach and that sort of her body's maybe feeling a little tired and exhausted. We've given her the things that have worked for you. You were homeless. You were lived in poverty, you know, and you started down this same road as so many great people have started exactly the same place that these people are sitting right now. Any last words of advice to her specifically?
I would say love yourself. I would say appreciate yourself. Be grateful for your life, your kids, your surroundings, whatever jobs that you do have. Because there's so many people that don't have any of it. They may not have a job. They may not have the kids. They may not have the health. They may not have the well-being. You've got to start where you're at. And for me, starting with gratitude and love is probably the most nourishing thing to do because it'll build strength. It'll build appreciation. And from there, you can take the other actions you needed to make the changes and to move forward. But right now, especially if the kids are in bed and you're relaxing, oh, goodness, reward yourself, love yourself, pat yourself, hug yourself, take the bubble bath, do whatever it happens to be, have a glass of wine, get a good night's sleep. Say you are doing great. Be proud of you.
On those great words, Dr. Joe Vitale, I am so looking forward to spending more time with you and to playing again in the future. And I'd love to have you back on the show. There's so many things we can talk about. And I want to remind people again of that wonderful offer you've given them as a free book, attractmoneynow.com. They can go there and then get that free book and they can start that journey. So thank you so much.
Oh, I loved it. Thank you for the opportunity and Godspeed to all your listeners.
Thank you. Like I said, that was a doozy, absolutely a doozy. He really has inspired so much in that conversation. And what I love, though, is that this kind of hard luck story that so many great people seem to have, they really come from that place quite often. And I don't know, when we are playing this music from down the Men at Work, so funny when I think of those words, a hard luck story. But the truth is that so many of the people I've interviewed and so many of the people that I have as friends, you know, have come through that sort of those real challenges. So if you're in a challenge right now, you should have hope. You should have hope that you won't know it now, but I bet you there'll be a time you'll look back at this time and you'll say, oh, I'm so glad it happened. And it was that situation that gave you the depth of experience or the depth of compassion or the depth of conviction or the ability to persist through crap, you know. And I can't tell you all the stuff that has gone on, you know, those things that most people at the time it's happening would wish they weren't happening. When I look back through my life story at all those moments, I realize that it's those moments that have given me the fortitude and the understanding and the wisdom in some way and the experience to continue the life or to create the life I've been able to create for myself. And so, you know, I love what he asked. You know, how did you ask yourself this question, right? When you look at the situation you're in, and it doesn't matter. Some of you, you know, you're not that lady with the three kids in destitute or struggling survival, but maybe you're making 100 grand a year and you're unhappy and you're stressed out all the time, or maybe it doesn't matter. There's always another level. You guys may have it figured out, but there's always another level. I see people who are, they say they're happy, but they're actually quite bored. You know, they've just said this is enough. And enough is, by the way, that's not a bad thing to say, but it's only if you're listening to your heart. If we're all, I believe, here to live a life of purpose is to contribute in some greater game. And I love that idea that he talked about with the puzzle. We each have a puzzle piece, and it's only when we come together that it becomes clear about what the big picture is, right? What the work of art is, I think he said. But asking those questions, how did I get here? Or what does this mean to me? What does it mean that I got three jobs? What does it mean that I have three kids and I'm alone? What does this mean to me? And he says, the meaning that we give events is the belief that is actually causing those very same events. And so that's such an easy thing for us to ask ourselves, what does this mean? and then listen to it. And then remember what he said, just managing those thoughts. It sounds so simple, but he really, three keys, right? Thoughts, okay? Support the group, getting other people involved in that, and then action, the right type of action. And this guy is a master of action. And so as we say that, you know, I want to thank you from down under, mate. I love it. It's just so it's so great to be here again. I'm looking forward to my 3 weeks, and I'll of course be recording on the road. So I don't know where it's going to happen, but it will happen somewhere. And so we may have some wobbly sound quality here and there. We'll see. We don't mind. Guess what? When you lead a kick-ass life, shit like that doesn't bother you. Anyway, I want you to go out there and have a kick-ass life, kick-ass week. Go out there and make someone's day. And listen, take Joe's suggestion and really, you know, listen to what he's done with his life, right? I mean, he's the master of that. And then go and get the free book. Read his book, attractmoneynow.com. Go there, attractmoneynow.com, and listen to and read all of his work for free. That's a great gift. So anyway, and don't forget, do something kind for someone. Work on your gratitudes. All these simple, simple things. Take 100% responsibility. I don't know how many times we talked about that, but first thing out of Joe's mouth, when he took 100% responsibility for everything in his life, everything not in his life, that then and only then was he able to shift. Anyway, see you on the other side, guys.
That was kick-ass.